Get the audio program designed to dissolve anxiety. The Safe Empowerment System is still available at the COVID discount of 50% off at quietbegins.com.
Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now.
Hello, welcome to the show. My name is Paul Coliani, and I am here to help you increase your emotional intelligence so that you can avoid dysfunction, handle toxic situations with grace and ease, and show up as your authentic self. Everything I talk about on this show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a medical or psychological professional before making any changes that could affect your physical or mental health. I got an email about a year and a half ago that I want to read to you. It's old, I know, but it has a topic that I want to talk about. It's about transitioning from being one of those balancing, people-pleasing type of people to somebody with healthier boundaries and someone who stands up for themselves, honors themselves in situations, and the people that knew the old you have to get used to the new you. But how do you transition from being someone who used to be that type of people pleaser, neutralizer, balancer type person into someone who has the healthier boundaries and isn't so much about pleasing everyone else, but showing up in a way of caring for yourself and others? And sometimes that involves caring for yourself first, if not always, caring for yourself first. Because if you're the type of person that I used to be, I wanted to make sure that everyone else was pleased, everyone else liked me, everyone else cared about me, and I cared about their opinions of me, then if that was you or is you, then life can be more difficult. Life used to burn me out because I was like that. And I'm not going to talk too much about people-pleasing today. I've had episodes specifically dedicated to that, but I think a lot of us have these qualities that we walk around with that we might look at as kindness and caring and being helpful to other people, but in reality, it's actually an energy drain for us. So if you ever feel like your kindness and your caring and your helpfulness is an energy drain, you're doing it wrong. You're doing it all wrong, because kindness and caring and compassion and generosity and support, all of these wonderful qualities that you can have and probably do have inside of you, have to come from a place of self-care. And that place of self-care is what gives you the abundance of energy and the abundance of love and compassion that you can use on someone else, because you have enough of it. When you have enough self-care, self-love and self-compassion, self-respect, when you have enough of that, then you have enough to give away. It's like if you have plenty of cash. If you have plenty of cash and extra left over, you have plenty to give away or buy something for someone or whatever. I believe it works in the same way, where we have these resources at our disposal. And in order to be able to be a kind, caring, loving, generous person to someone else, we have to have enough of those resources. It doesn't mean that we can't be kind or caring or generous to somebody else. There are people that are very poor that give to other people. That can be financially poor. That can be emotionally poor. That can mean a deficit in their own love and support in their life. Yet they still give to others. But even if that's true, the idea behind what I'm talking about today is to give to others without losing anything, without losing your power. Because giving to someone else, whether that's kindness, caring, or respect, or even money, giving to someone else usually requires you to have somewhat of an abundant supply to be able to give. And this is why people pleasers get burnt out, is because they don't have that abundant supply. They just have enough to give, and then they hope that the person they're giving to reciprocates so that they can re-energize. That's how I did it. I would give in hopes for a reciprocation, and if that reciprocation came, I was refilled. That emotional fuel came, and I was able to walk around energized again because, hey, I got it back. I gave and I got it back. But I never had an abundant supply. And that's not how it's supposed to work. In my opinion, that's not how it's supposed to work. I believe it's supposed to work that when you give, you get immediately. It feels good giving. And some people might think, well, yeah, that's what happens. When I give, you know, whether that's love or care or energy or money, it feels good giving in that moment. So I don't necessarily need anything back. Well, that's a good thing, because if that's happening with you, then you probably do have an abundance of whatever resource we're talking about. But if you don't have that abundant resource available, then this is when it feels like you're losing more than you're winning. And people pleasers of the world will know that you get burnt out. You get burnt out in your relationships, at your jobs, in family, wherever it is that you feel like you need to be helpful and caring and supportive. If you do that in deficit of resources, you will burn out, and then you will feel worn down, and you will also develop resentment, because people-pleasing does lead to resentment. Again, I don't want to go too deep into people-pleasing now, but people-pleasers will get a lot from this episode, and anyone that doesn't consider themselves a people-pleaser, but when they offer their time and energy and resources to others, if that feels like they're burning out, then this episode could resonate with them. Because my main point with today's episode is the transition that you make from being this kind and caring and generous person that gets burnt out by doing that, from being that to being someone who can honor yourself and have enough resources in abundance that then you can choose to give or not. And I know give is a loaded word. Give could mean time, energy, or these resources that I mentioned. But whatever it is to you, after giving, you should not feel drained. I mean, it's going to happen. You're going to feel drained every now and then because you give and give and give, and it could be out of love, and you could have had an abundance, but it's still draining. That's a different type of drain, though. When you feel drained because you gave your heart at building a home for Habitat for Humanity or something. If you did that, then that kind of giving can be very rewarding, but it's not necessarily looking for reciprocation. You just feel joy, or you feel a sense of accomplishment or a sense of pride in what you did, and you can look at that, and that's how you regain your energy. And that usually doesn't require someone's personal contact with you. It's like you pay for the person behind you at the drive-thru or in line at the coffee shop, and you walk away and you don't look back because you know that they're going to receive something that you gave them, but you feel fulfilled just by giving instead of feeling fulfilled by them coming up to you and saying, thank you so much for what you did, which feels great when they do, but when they don't, where are you with that? And if you're okay with that, then great. You're probably not the typical type of giver, and you probably do have an abundance to give. Maybe that's only a financial thing, but this works, like I said, with all the resources I'm talking about, time, energy, and all these other resources. So the reason I'm telling you all this is because the email I received over a year ago, she said that, you know, she listened to the show and she learned a lot and she was changing. And I didn't read that part. I didn't want to fill this whole segment with her talking about how wonderful the show was. I am appreciative and I'm grateful, but I wanted to get to the meat of her email, which said, through all this, so she shared something with me, and then she said, through all this, I came to realize that I'm a people pleaser, which I'm working on. But as much as I'm improving my people pleasing habits, the damage feels like it's already been done. I've been people pleasing for so long that now I feel like I don't know myself at all. My entire identity was wrapped in my relationship, because she had a relationship. Earlier in the email, she said she had a relationship and it ended. But she said, my entire identity was wrapped in my relationship, my interests, my goals, Even my choice of wardrobe. Nearly every damn detail of how I lived was heavily influenced by my people-pleasing. I even dropped out of school and put off a career because that's what I felt my boyfriend wanted from me. Okay, before I continue reading this email, I'm going to comment on this, and I'm so glad she observed this. I'm so glad she figured this out, because this is exactly the path of a typical people-pleaser, is that they will give up aspects of their life to accommodate someone else, and they think that's a good thing. That's never a good thing. I mean, rarely. That's rarely a good thing, because what's happening here is you are giving away your power. Power is another loaded word. What does that mean? That means you're giving away your happiness. You're giving away your freedoms. You're giving away your interests. You're giving away, there's a lot that could be in there. And when she started changing her interests and her goals, and she put off her career, that's a huge one, because that gave her boyfriend the power, meaning he didn't have to give up anything, and he actually had control of her life, whether he wanted that or not. It turned out that that's what she gave him, is basically the reins to her life. And when you do that with someone, the chance of losing it all is even worse. And what that means is that you could have a great relationship, and then one day the relationship's over. Then where are you? What are you made of at that point? If you gave all of it up and you did everything to please the other person, or at least accommodate them in some way, then who are you at that point? Really, all you are is an extension of them. This is something I've talked about with narcissism, and you know, it's not an original concept for me. It's studied. Narcissists believe that their romantic partners and other people in their life are extensions of them, which is why they want control over them. If the extension of your shoulder is your arm, you want control over your arm. A narcissistic person wants control over the people they love, typically romantic partners. Sometimes they treat family differently, but typically their romantic partner, they want control over them, just like they were controlling an arm, which is why the victim of narcissistic abuse feels like a shell of their former self after they get out of the relationship, or even during the relationship. But certainly when they're done, they feel like that shell because they don't know who they are anymore. They gave up so much to accommodate someone else in hopes of, and this is probably what many people have experienced, in hopes of being loved, in hopes of satisfying the other person, in hopes that the other person will see that they are doing everything they can to please them, so it should enrich the relationship. But it never does. It's never satisfying enough. A victim of narcissism can do everything exactly the way the narcissist wants, and the narcissist will still not be pleased enough. You cannot satisfy someone that not only lets you give up your life and all your interests, but also controls you and wants you to do what they want you to do, because they need to feed off their ability to control you. So if you're doing everything, quote, right, then when there's nothing else you can do, that control seems to disappear, taking away the narcissist's supply, meaning they have to administer more control in a different way. So again, if you are with someone who has narcissistic tendencies, or is a narcissist, or is emotionally abusive, and they are treating you as if you are a part of them instead of apart from them, meaning you are a part of them, like their arm or their leg, not apart from them, like you are separate, then you're going to lose yourself if you are playing that game. You're going to lose yourself because they want to control you. Their control is their narcissistic supply, and as you give more and more and more to them, they take more, and they will continue to take more. So a relationship with someone like this goes nowhere. It only suits to feed them and drain you. So any type of person that does this to you, where you feel like an extension of them in the way I explained, you're going to feel drained. And what's interesting is that people pleasers do this to people that aren't necessarily narcissists. People pleasers do this to themselves. The person that likes to placate, that likes to balance, that doesn't like confrontation, that wants to make everything okay, they have a tendency to drain themselves in order to bring peace and balance to what they see as perhaps conflict that might be starting or existing. And if that conflict exists, that is a very uncomfortable place for the person I'm talking about. Conflict is an uncomfortable place for a lot of people, but especially for the person who just wants peace and balance all the time, and they do extra work to make sure it happens instead of taking care of themselves and standing up for themselves and honoring themselves and telling people where the line is and what their boundaries are. When they don't do that, then they're trying to make the peace with everyone in the room or everyone in the situation, and it rarely goes their way, and they lose a lot of energy because they're doing this. Anyway, coming back to this email, the person said that her entire identity was wrapped in the relationship. We can do this to ourselves. This is something that we do to ourselves, because as soon as somebody says, you know, it would be better if you dropped what you were doing to accommodate our relationship or accommodate me, either because I make more money or because it will give you some time off, whatever they say, it might sound appealing when you're first doing it because you want the relationship to go great. But think about what you're losing, especially if you're no longer in a relationship with this person. One of the questions I love to ask myself is, if I were alone, would I make this decision? If you were alone, would you make that decision? If you say, yes, I would make that decision. I've been wanting to make a change. I would love to give up this career or give up this thing that I'm doing because it'll give me more time to do what I want. And having someone in my life to do it with, that's even better. So yes, I would do that if I were alone. Great. I think that's a great gauge, a great way to test if this is the right decision for you. But if the answer is, well, I don't think I would do that if I were alone because I really like what I do, or I really like this interest that I have, or this hobby that I have. I really like it. Then you have to say, nope, I'm not going to give that up. I really like that. I'm going to do that for me. And hopefully, I think a healthy partner will say, okay, we'll work it out. We'll figure it out then. You keep doing what you're doing. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing, and we'll figure it out. I think that's a great compromise, a great way to balance where you're both working with each other. And then there's the response that somebody might have, which is, well, you have to do that. You have to give that up. If you don't give that up, then this isn't going to work. Now, I can understand that there are situations where giving something up might be a compromise for the greater good of the relationship, of something that's going on. If you're saving money, if you want to save more time, if you want more time off, whatever it is, there can be compromises that can work. My only fear when it comes to giving something up is any regret or resentment that might form. So if you're willing to look at something and go, you know what, I'm willing to give that up for this greater good, whatever that is, then I believe you should come to a full acceptance. Okay. Since this is for the greater good, I can give this up and be okay with it. And then try that on in your mind and think about, is this going to be something I regret or resent in a year or 5 years? Is this something I can be okay with? And if the answer is yes, then great. I think it's a good direction. You can give it a shot. If the answer is no, again, you might have to have that talk. No, I can't give that up because I really want it in my life. So that's important. And I said that because this person wrote, my entire identity was wrapped in the relationship. Yes, you have to be so careful about this. When you get into any type of relationship and you start giving up parts of yourself, who are you when they're not around? Even if you stay in the relationship, who are you when they're not around? If it's all about them, what happened to you? Where did you go? I know there are people resonating with this right now, and I'm sorry, but this is important. You need to understand what you'll lose, especially if they're no longer around. Now, I'm not saying that you can't make your entire life about them. I sort of am, but I'm not saying that because there are people that have been together for 30, 40 years, or even 5 or 10 years that have intertwined everything about their lives together. They've mixed them up. It's become very enmeshed, and everything that one person does affects the other person. This can work. This can absolutely work, but not to the extent that if this other person were to leave or die, then where do you land and how do you land and how do you recover? Because if you don't have any part of you left because the whole thing was wrapped up in this other person, that's the tough part. That's when you fall even harder. And I know that you have this house and you have these kids and you have these jobs and maybe you work together and the whole thing is tied together. It can work. For some people, it can work. And then if there is a fall, they can recover. I believe everyone can recover. It's just a lot harder when everything is wrapped up, which is why it's important when you start a relationship of any sort that you keep the things that you love about yourself with you. Not that you can't share them, not that you can't be together and do them, but you still keep those parts of you so that you don't lose your individuality. You don't lose the components that make you who you are, and you just don't make it all about somebody else. So that's my comment on that, and I'm going to continue reading this email. She says, "Now I'm desperately trying to figure out who I am." I mean, exactly what I was just saying. "And what I want. I'm trying to decide on a career path, but my indecision is keeping me at a standstill. In fact, my whole life feels like it's at a standstill. It was easy when the breakup first happened because I knew the next steps were to establish a new home somewhere and get myself together emotionally. But now that I've accomplished that, what's next? I feel like I'm waiting for something to happen, but I don't know what that thing is. Do I start school? I'm afraid of student loan debt. Do I just get an entry-level job and start climbing the ladder? I can't seem to commit to the idea that I might get stuck in something. Do I just take this time to float through space and see if a great idea hits me sometime in the next few months? That just makes me feel like a lazy good-for-nothing. All this confusion is making me feel depressed, which makes it even harder for me to take steps toward a better future. Where do I begin finding my new identity and my new path? And how do I ensure that this new identity and new path isn't just another result of people-pleasing like the old version of me? As confused and slightly lost as I feel, I still carry an underlying foundation of peace and happiness. I know things will turn out well, and I'm so, so thankful for everything you've done to get me here." Okay, thank you for sharing that, and thank you for your thank you. I appreciate that. And I want to say that, you know, this letter is over a year old, so she probably has a whole new life now and everything's going great. I'm going to send her this podcast and tell her that I addressed it, and I would love to hear an update from her. But she went into kind of an area that I didn't expect because I didn't read this ahead of time. But she said, you know, what do I do now? I have all these decisions to make. I'm not sure what to do. And that goes into something I've talked about in another episode, which is how to make the best decisions. I mean, every episode, I want to empower you to help you make the right decisions for you. How do you do that? There's something that I do when I'm stuck and I'm not sure what decision to make, kind of a 2 or 3 step process. The first step is to learn what I value most and what I care about. So I might look at my life and think, what do I really care about? What do I really want in my life? And that might be something simple like weekends off, which I never get, and time with friends and time with family and time outside in nature. There's a lot of things that I might like that might not necessarily be conducive to a career or some of my choices, but I like to write this stuff down or think about them so I know what's important to me, so that when I'm making a decision, I can evaluate those decisions and compare them to what I have written down for what I value and find out if they're compatible. Because if I said I don't want to spend 3 hours a day in the car commuting to work, and I got a job that takes me an hour and a half to get there, I'm not going to meet that value, which is going to make me unhappy. Now, that doesn't mean I won't get a job that is thrilling and I love it and I can make that small compromise. That can happen as well. But it is important to me to either write down or think about what I value most. It's a values exercise. You just write down what you value most about certain areas of your life, whether it's relationships or career or personal growth and development, your health, even your spirituality, all of these areas of your life. It's important to know what your values are. What do I value most? What do I value most about relationships? I want honesty. I want attraction. I want to laugh. I want somebody that I can hold their hand and watch TV or walk down the beach. I want somebody that cares about me and supports me and respects me. All this stuff are values that we can look at in our life and make sure that they're being met. So if we do meet someone, we can say, okay, are these values being met? Because if they're not, then you will likely not be as happy as you could be. And then, you know, I talk about this in the Stop Self-Sabotage workbook on my website, theoverwhelmedbrain.com, where if you download that book, it walks you through helping you determine what your values are and also putting them in order. I mean, you don't have to buy the book. You can just listen to me right now and you can do this right now. You can write down everything you value and put it in order, because your top values are going to be most important. And as you line up these values and put them in a hierarchy, because the closer to the top you get, you know, if your values 1 through 5 are the most important values to you, then you don't want to compromise those. Because if you compromise any of those top values, what ends up happening is that you end up unhappy because you're not getting your values met. So that's kind of my first step with decision making is the decision I'm going to make in alignment with my values? So if she said, you know, if I start school, I'm afraid of student debt. Well, is student debt like a fear that you have? Because if your value is, I never want to be broke, and that's like at the top, then student debt might make you feel broke. It may not be broke. You may be able to handle student debt. I don't know. But if that's something that you've been wanting to do and you don't have a big fear about it, about getting in debt, and you can picture yourself in the career of your choice after that, then that might be something that's in alignment with what you want to do, and it makes you feel good. So you can evaluate these things like I do, but that's my first step, is I line up all these values and I make sure that my decision is in alignment with those values so that I'm not off track. It's like following the lighthouse to the shore. As long as I'm in alignment with my values, I can always see the light from the lighthouse. And I'm always moving in that direction. And as soon as I make a decision that's out of alignment with my values, I'm lost. I'm like, where's the lighthouse? I'm not there. I'm still lost at sea. It's a little dramatic, but it's the idea of losing your way when you get out of alignment with your values, which is why I call that workbook Stopping Self-Sabotage. This is how you sabotage yourself, is by getting out of alignment with your values. So that's my first step. And my second step with decision making is reaching a point where I make a decision no matter what. And yes, that might mean I make the wrong decision. You might make the wrong decision. And the reason I do that no matter what is because it helps me practice commitment. It helps me practice follow through. So if I have path A and path B in front of me, and I'm not sure which one to take, I'm just going to go with path B or path A. But I'm going to make a decision. I'm going to say, you know what? I'm going to take path B. I don't care. I'm just going to follow path B. But if I'm wrong, what does that mean? It means that I've learned that I'm wrong while following the path, instead of thinking I might be wrong and not following either path. It's the only subtle difference, but it makes a massive difference in your life. If you have a binary decision in front of you, one way or another, then you make one decision and you follow that decision until it proves you right or wrong. That is my simplest formula for decision making: lining up with your values and taking one path no matter what. Because what happens is I take path B and I do it for a month and I realize, oh my God, path B is like awful. It's like trudging through mud. I'm trying so hard to get through this and it's not working and I'm not enjoying this at all. Now I know path A was the right choice. I know you can't do this with everything. You can't say I'm going to take path B and do something major that is irreversible. That is a little tougher, yes, but I don't think many decisions in life are like that. There are a bunch, but many decisions aren't like that. Many decisions, you go down one path and you discover, oh, this is the wrong path. I spent a lot of money. I spent a lot of time. I spent a lot of energy. I should get off this path and take the other one. When that happens, then you get off the path. I know I make it sound easy, and it's not always easy, and sometimes you have to break commitments. Sometimes you have to say, sorry, I made the wrong choice. And that's okay, because this is how you learn. This is how you discover what decisions are right for you. It's probably not the best way to do it or the most perfect way, but what ends up happening as you repeat this over and over again, this ability to make a decision no matter what, even if you find out it's the wrong path later, is that you get very good at making decisions in the future. So if you make the wrong decision this time and make the wrong decision next time, I guarantee you, you're going to get very good at making the right decision, because going down the path gives you the experience instead of thinking about going down the path, which only gives you imagination. It only gives you something pretend that you visualize in your mind that it may or may not be. That doesn't mean that your visualization is always false. It just means that you're just making it up. Well, if I take that path, this could happen. But if I take this path, this could happen. And because you can't make that decision, you'll never find out if either one happens. So you might as well take path A or path B and just deal with it. Just deal with it. Just do it and see what happens. And when you do this, this is why it's important to have a solid foundation of who you are. And this kind of works against what this person said. She didn't really know who she was. So when you fail or make a decision that turns out to be wrong and you don't know who you are, then falling is harder. But sometimes you have to rebuild yourself. I mean, always. You have to rebuild yourself by falling. A baby learns to walk by falling. That's how it works. A baby doesn't learn to walk by studying videos and doing it right the first time. A baby has to learn to walk by falling over and over again. I know this is common sense. It's personal growth 101. But I think sometimes we need to rehear it. We need to rehear the basics. So making a decision is no different than learning to walk again, especially when you have no solid foundation of good decision making. Okay, let's get some bruises as we go along and we'll get through it. Again, I know there are exceptions. You can't do this with major life changes, but if you do it with simple things, you'll get better at it. So that's my 1-2 punch for decision making. And it has helped me, because I've gone down the wrong path and have learned beyond a shadow of a doubt what doesn't work. And sometimes that can be a huge success, to learn what doesn't work. And it's helped me. I'm going to continue with this email and continue going along the path that I started, which was getting you to a place from either people pleasing or being the person that likes to keep the peace or likes to stay out of conflict. I'm going to give you some tools to use so that when you make the transition from being any type of person that wants to stay out of conflict and wants to make sure that everyone is still peaceful around you and they have to get used to the new you that likes to honor their boundaries and show up as authentically but still not get into conflict, there is a way to do that. I'm going to help you get there if you aren't sure of that, or if you just want some extra tools in your tool belt. I'll share those when we come back, right after this. There is a fascinating app that I really appreciate. I am on their newsletter now. It's called Curable. That's Curable. And this app is designed by former pain sufferers, physicians, and pain experts. And they are doing something with an app that I've not seen before, which is helping you with chronic pain. And I'm not saying you have to wire the app to your brain or anything, but they do guide you through what you can do maybe differently than you've done or give you thoughts or ideas that you haven't thought of. And of course, they give you expert advice from the people who've worked with chronic pain, who've had chronic pain, and who actually help people with their pain. And I think it's going to be something that really benefits you if you're dealing with chronic pain. You can find it over at getcurable.com/brain. You set up a free account, and if you decide to upgrade to a subscription, you'll get 50% off, again, at getcurable.com/brain. And it's really cool. When you set it up, it walks you through, like, it's texting you, and you answer back and forth. And after it's set up, then you have the app guide you through whatever you're dealing with. And they've dealt with a lot. They deal with a lot of chronic pain sufferers. And this app will help you not only understand your pain, but help you deal with it in a way that maybe you haven't done. There are things that you may not have done where the app guides you through science-backed techniques designed to help you overcome things like the fear of movement or the fear of symptoms, even the fear of never getting better. The app also offers actionable strategies that can help you retrain your brain's response to pain, and in many cases reduce the intensity and frequency of physical symptoms. This is science-based stuff. It will give you the education and the insight that you need to think differently about your pain. I mean, I watched my girlfriend go through years of pain. She had a bunion on her foot. It was always in pain. In fact, this was right before I met her. When I met her, I saw her bunion. I'm like, why didn't she get some help with this? And she just said, well, you know, my mom had it, and I just thought it was something that I had to live with. And I'm thinking, what? Where did you get this information that you have to live with a bunion? And so we had to research. We had to go online, and we had to figure it out. We had to find out if there was any solutions or cures. And there were. But having this app would probably have saved her so many years of walking on this painful bunion. And thankfully, she's in a better place now. She had an operation and everything worked out. But I think the app would have been something that would have taken years off of her suffering, or at least being able to understand her suffering better and be able to get through it and do things that were beneficial to her instead of hurtful to her. So anyway, check out Curable. Go to getcurable.com/brain, set up your free account, and if you upgrade to a subscription, like I said, you'll get 50% off. getcurable.com/brain. Welcome back. Like I said, I want to help you transition from being any type of people pleaser or balancer or neutralizer. That's kind of weird words, but that's what my mom used to do, and that's where I learned how to balance situations. I was born the middle child in my family, so that helped me become sort of the balancer, the person who wants to make everything very calm and even and balanced and neutral. And I had to go through this transition myself. I had to go from being this people-pleasing, avoiding conflict person all the time to someone who learned how to honor myself and still stayed out of conflict. Because there are probably times that you want to honor yourself and speak up for yourself, but you want to do so without creating conflict. And there's an overlying philosophy that I utilize in my own life that has to do with not only speaking up or standing up for yourself, but also allowing the other person to reveal who they really are in that moment. Sounds a little strange, but what I'm saying is that when there's an opportunity to honor yourself, you can allow the other person to help you honor you or reveal who they really are. But you can do so in a non-confrontational way. And what I mean by that is, let's just say that somebody came up to you and said, I need you to do this for me. Will you do it? Now, let's just say it's not a boss and it's somebody that has always known you as a yes person. Okay, yes, I'll do that. No problem. But that is really burning you out because you are finally standing up for yourself and you're realizing how much energy it takes just to say yes to everything. So you decide that you don't want to do this thing that they want to ask. Hey, will you help me carry this couch down 14 flights of stairs? And you think, you know, I'm getting older. I probably shouldn't do that anymore. But you realize if you say no, you have this little fear that kicks in. Maybe it's a little fear of not being liked or a fear of abandonment or a fear of rejection. Whatever it is, I'm sure it comes from a deep place inside of you. But if it comes up, then that will tend to alter your behavior into agreeing to something that you don't want to do, instead of just standing up and saying, you know, I can't do that. I'm going to say no. Because the person who is used to you saying yes might take offense to that. Hopefully they don't. I mean, the whole point of this isn't to reveal what jerks people are. I hope not. But it is to help them realize who they're going to be when you stand up for yourself. And what it does is it makes them face themselves. I mean, what I'm going to teach you, it's going to make them face themselves. And it's very difficult to be an all-time people pleaser that goes from saying yes all the time to suddenly saying no to the people who are used to you saying yes, or they're used to taking advantage of you, or they're used to walking all over you because you never complained before. So why can't I just use you for what I need you for? Now, some people don't even realize they're doing it because you've allowed it to happen for so long that they are now the automatic bad guy without even trying. I've had that happen in my life. People became the bad guy because I simply waited for them to figure out that I didn't want to do what they wanted me to do. I never told them. I just waited for them to figure it out. And of course, they never figured it out. They never did, because I always acted nice and said yes, or didn't say no. I always did what I feel like kept the relationship copacetic. I wanted to make sure that there were no waves, and I definitely wanted to make sure there was no confrontation. So I would say things like, oh yeah, yeah, I'll do that. I'll help you with the couch and 14 flights of stairs. No problem. Even though I just had back surgery, because I wanted to be liked. I wanted to be liked, and I had a fear of rejection, and I believed that if I said no to someone, they wouldn't like me, and then I wouldn't have them as a friend anymore. And that's a false belief. And if you have people that you say no to and they're not your friend anymore, they never were. They were never your friend. They were just using you. And we don't want those people in our life. So these steps that I'm sharing today help reveal who really is supportive of you and who really wants you to honor yourself and wants you to be happy. I mean, I'm really generalizing it here. It doesn't mean they don't want you to be happy, but we need to find out who in our life is going to accept this new version of us as we move into this new stage of our life, from always pleasing others to finally taking charge of our own life and honoring ourselves and choosing to please others. Because at that point, when you honor yourself, you're creating an abundance of resources inside of you. That's what I mentioned in the first segment. As you honor yourself more and more, you're going to have the time and energy to be able to give to others without losing any energy or power. And that's important. You want to be able to do this stuff for yourself first so that you have it available anytime somebody else needs it, if you want. This is the choice that you give yourself. I have it if I need it, if I want to use it. So the first thing I look at when transitioning from always pleasing somebody else and making sure everyone else is okay is to know your own boundaries. You have to know your boundaries. You have to know what you will and won't accept in your life. And that needs to be defined, because if you don't know your boundaries, then you don't know when someone's really crossing the line. And for me, I made it a boundary when I feel disrespected, then someone's crossing the line. And what does that mean? That means when somebody starts to disrespect me, I'm either going to tell them, hey, you know, that's disrespectful. Don't do that again. Or I could leave the situation. I could leave the conversation because I am getting disrespected. And I might just say, look, I can't talk to you anymore, or just walk away. I could do that. There are a number of things I could do. But because I know that boundary well, I can see it a mile away. I can see it starting. And as soon as it starts, I don't go into surprise mode. I go into prepared mode. I am prepared because I know that boundary. When you know your boundaries, you are prepared. So one of my boundaries is I sort of demand respect. It sounds narcissistic right there, but I'm not saying I walk around like that. I'm saying if disrespect starts to come my way, then I might have to demand respect. Or it's just not going to happen. We're not going to have a conversation. We're not going to have a relationship. It's just not going to happen. Then I can walk away or whatever. So it's important to know your boundaries. What are your boundaries? You may not know them. You may not have them. You might have to define them. And the way you define them, I've talked about this before, but you want to make sure that you know what's acceptable in your life and what's not. If somebody calls you a bad name, is that acceptable? You can find out if it's acceptable just by asking yourself the simple question, am I okay with it? Yeah, somebody calls me a bad name, I'm okay with it. No big deal. That might be. You could be okay with it. But if you try it on and you feel it and you think, oh, that doesn't feel very good, you're probably not okay with it. I'm not saying that these are hard and fast rules. I'm just saying you start to define them so you know what you'll accept and what you won't. Okay, so somebody calls me a name. I'm not okay with it. That's a boundary. I have established one boundary. What's the next one? Well, how about when somebody peels out on my lawn? You know, if you have a house and a lawn and somebody comes up and parks their car in your yard and starts peeling out, it's probably not something you want. It's probably not something you'll ever deal with, hopefully. But if you do, that might be a sign of disrespect. You could look at that as a respect boundary, or respecting your property. That could be a boundary. So you might think to yourself, no, that's not acceptable. Might not be the best example, but you can think along those lines. That's not acceptable. And I will definitely say something about that, at least when I develop the ability to honor myself without confrontation. So that might be in there too. A better example might be when somebody wants to borrow your car, if you have a car, and you don't really trust them because they've had 4 accidents in the past 2 years. So you might think, you know, I don't think that's a good idea because you've had accidents. You might want to say something like that. So that could be a boundary. That could be unacceptable to you. You might think, I'm not going to let this person drive my car. That's unacceptable. But you could also have a thought that, well, you know, it's insured, and if they crash, it's under their insurance, or is it under my insurance? I don't know. I have to figure that out. And then they don't crash, or they do crash, but you make that decision anyway, whether they're going to use it or not, and you find out if they are trustworthy from this point on. But you look at these events in your life, and you decide if they are boundaries or not. And I think the best way to do this, instead of just making up every single scenario that could come down the line, is to think about things that happened in your past that you didn't like. Oh, so-and-so did this to me. Oh, I didn't like that. That's unacceptable. So-and-so said this to me. I didn't like that. That's unacceptable. And you can start knowing your boundaries then. It takes time. It takes time to figure out what is acceptable and what's not. And I think probably the best way to do it is as you move forward in life, as things happen in your life, when it happens, then you define it. Then you can say, oh, that just happened. I didn't like that. I'm going to make that a boundary. Again, these aren't hard and fast rules. It doesn't mean you have to obey them every time it comes up. It's just a matter of noticing them. So this is for people who don't necessarily know their boundaries well, and you want to figure out how to create them. That's several ways to do it. But I do believe it's important to know if it's a boundary. And just asking yourself the question, is this acceptable to me or not, then you'll know it's a boundary. So step one, know your boundaries. Step two is the question that you ask instead of the boundary that you present. And what I mean by that is the people that have known you as a people pleaser or the one who keeps the peace all your life, they're the ones that are going to be the most challenging when it comes to transitioning from being that person to someone who actually honors themselves and presents their boundaries in a way that you hope is non-confrontational. And I believe one of the ways you can do this is when there's a boundary violation, instead of saying, hey, look, you're violating my boundaries, would you please stop? Or in my case, hey, look, that's disrespectful, will you please stop? You can ask the question, would it be okay? Or would you mind? So there's two questions that you can use, either one of them or both. Would it be okay, or would you mind? How does this work? You could say in the disrespect example, somebody's disrespecting you, would you mind not being so aggressive toward me? I mean, it does sound like it could still be confrontational, but what you're doing in this case, and this is a more severe case when you actually have to calm someone down from being aggressive, yes. But what you're doing here is you're making them have to admit the type of person they are. Are they going to reveal to you that they just want to take advantage of you, or they just want to yell at you, or they just want to disrespect you? Or are they going to reveal that, of course, they want you to honor yourself? Of course, they don't want to hurt you or be aggressive towards you. Because some people, they might be oblivious, they're doing it. But the would you mind or would it be okay approach is a great non-confrontational way that makes them have to hear themselves say the next thing, which is, if you said, would you mind not using such an aggressive tone? And you're asking nicely, would you mind not using such an aggressive tone? They might say, I didn't know I was being so aggressive. I'm sorry about that. Or they could say, what do you mean? What's the problem? I'm not being aggressive. Then in that moment, they had an opportunity to check in and choose to continue their aggression or not, which is what I mean when they say they're going to reveal to themselves and you if they are just that person or not. Because if you ask, would you mind, you're asking for someone to honor you in a way. You're asking for them to consider your thoughts or your emotions. And so you're giving them that opportunity. You are empowering them with the decision to move forward in their same manner or not. So the question, would you mind not using those particular words when you're talking to me? Again, it could be confrontational, but it still gives them the opportunity to check in. But disrespect is kind of a harsh one to start with. It can be very confrontational in the first place. So I like to start with something simpler, like with a yes or no question. Like, hey, can you do this project for me and you don't want to do it? Hey, can you help me carry this couch down 14 flights? The would you mind or would it be okay question is really perfect because you can say something like, would it be okay if I said no? Would it be okay if I said no? What are they going to do? Are they going to say, no, it's not okay? They might. They might say that. Or they say, what? You never say no. You always say yes. Hopefully they don't say that because now it does sound like they're taking advantage of you. But hopefully they say, oh, no, okay, yeah, of course. You know, if you can't do it, that's fine. And then at that point you can say, yeah, I'm not available for that day, or my back hurts, or I just had surgery, or I shouldn't be doing that because my doctor said this, or my back gets sore. Then you can get into a conversation, but the whole thing starts off without the initial confrontation. And the whole idea is to avoid the confrontation so that you can ease into honoring yourself. Let's see, another example is, let's use the car example. Hey, can I borrow your car? I want to go to the store. A response to that could be, would you be okay if I said no? Now, the way I worded that has to make them reflect on how they feel inside about you honoring yourself. And I think that's key. I think if you can get them to reflect on how they feel about you honoring yourself, this is where they reveal who they are to you. Because if they say, no, I wouldn't be okay, I need this car, and I can't believe you'd say no, that does reveal a part of them or all of them that doesn't necessarily want you to be your own person. And that's important to know, because if you are around these people, even after a non-confrontational question that you just asked, would you mind if I said no, then you realize that these people aren't playing fairly. No wonder they're draining you. No wonder that you always feel like you are wearing down around these people, because they probably have been taking advantage of you and they know it. So we have to be very careful around those people, that when we give them the opportunity, when we empower them, giving them the choice to reflect and realize that we are presenting a boundary that they can choose to honor or not, hopefully they reflect in a way that is supportive of us instead of self-serving, that doesn't benefit us at all. In fact, it can even hurt us or the relationship. So that question, would it be okay or would you mind if, helps you to understand who they really are and how they'll respond from that point on. And this also helps you ease into the boundaries thing, giving you the choice to do it non-confrontationally, at the same time honoring yourself, which can be very helpful. So the last thing I want to share in regards to transitioning from making everyone happy to honoring yourself is to remember to own your decisions, own your path. And what that means is when you make a choice, be comfortable with it. Be comfortable inside you so that when you present the person with that choice, with the opportunity to reflect, that they see that you are comfortable inside you with it. Because some people who aren't out for your best interest are going to use your hesitation or your insecurity against you. Those types of people will say, oh, come on, I want to do this. And you're either going to say, well, I'm not sure if I want to do this or not. Or you can say, no, I'm very comfortable in my decision. I'm very comfortable with that. And you can hear it in my voice. I'm very comfortable with that. There's no way I'll do it. I don't want to do it. That's not saying that they're wrong. That's not saying that you don't care about them. It's saying that you like the decision that you made and you're going to stick with it because this is what you prefer. So I really believe in owning these decisions that you make for yourself and these boundaries that you create for yourself, because what ends up happening is that your confidence shines through, and it's very hard for people to latch on to some sort of insecurity or hesitation that they're sensing in you, so they have trouble taking advantage of you. Because some people take advantage of these insecurities in us. If you say, well, and I really don't want you to use the car, I just don't think it's a good idea, then they have an opportunity to get inside your head and convince you to do something else. But when you get comfortable going through these steps and making these transitions, feeling really good about the decision that you're making and the boundary that you're honoring inside of you, when you do that, when you feel so good about that inside of you, it comes through. And that is another thing that they have to face in themselves if they choose not to honor you honoring yourself. They will have to face that they are taking something away from you. So if you said, nope, I'm comfortable with the decision that I made that I don't want you to use the car. I'm comfortable with that decision. Then they have to face your confidence in a way that causes them to make a choice to break you down at this point, because your insecurity is already a broke down point. If you say, well, no, I'm not sure, then they have an easier in. But when you own that decision, it's very difficult for them to find that crack or that exploit that they can take advantage of and say, oh, come on, you can do this, when you are in a confident space. It's more difficult, and hopefully the people that are in your life will allow you to be who you are and honor you honoring yourself and love you for taking care of yourself. Because people that love us really want us to be happy, and if they want us to be happy, they're going to want us to make decisions that work for us. This is how it's supposed to work. Not everyone follows that, but this is how I see it. So I hope this helps you with any decisions or boundaries or anything that you're working on in your life, especially in the areas where you feel like you might have to be confrontational. There's always a way not to be confrontational. And my overlying philosophy about that, if it has to come down to honoring yourself and you feel like it might have some sense or semblance of confrontation in it, that you remember that you are doing this for you, not against them. Because there's a big difference in saying, no, I don't want to do this for you. You got into 4 accidents this year, and I don't want to use my car. There's a big difference in that and saying, would you mind if I said no? Would you be okay with that? And they might say, well, no, I really need the car. Why don't you just give me the car? Then instead of attacking them, like, no, you smash cars, you could say, no, I feel more comfortable saying no. I feel more comfortable not letting you use it. It's still about you. It's about your comfort. It's about what you want for you, which again, they will have to face and try to talk you out of it. But that just shows that they aren't listening to you, that they're not honoring you, honoring your boundaries, and they prefer to break through or violate your boundaries. This reveals who they are, and it's important to know who those people are in your life so that you don't get yourself into other situations with them. And you may not want to bother with these people sometimes because they're just unreasonable. And they definitely seem selfish. Because if you're presenting these things and they are trying to talk you out of it, they're not listening to you. anyway, this is the kind of people that maybe are a little tough to be in your life if they don't listen to you and they don't really care if you say no. Thank you for joining me today. It's great to connect with you again. We'll be right back with my thank yous and my goodbyes and my final words after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank our sponsor, and I want you to check them out. Check out that chronic pain app and see if it helps you at curable.com/brain. And if you end up signing up, it's 50% off. Go to curable.com/brain. I also want to thank our patrons of the week, Angela, James, Nikki, Kate, Karen, Crystal, Tracy, Victoria. Patrons are the financial supporters of the show, and I am so grateful for them. Some of them have been on for years. Some of these patrons have been giving a monthly donation for years, and this is exactly what keeps this show going, and it makes me feel all warm inside because I'm just so grateful. I have so much gratitude toward those who do that for the show and for me. I mean, I am grateful, and it is their way of either thanking me or paying for the show because it's a free show. And it's certainly not necessary, which makes me all the more grateful. Thank you, patrons. If you want to be a patron or you want to make a one-time donation to the show, you can do so over at patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. And again, thank you, patrons. And I also want to thank Rebecca, who did make a donation. Thank you, Rebecca. Just as grateful, just as warm and fuzzy that I get from you as well. I'm so grateful for everyone that contributes to the show. And if you find value in the show, you can do so as well. And if you find value and you don't have the financial means to do so, then I also receive your emails. I get your reviews online. I get all of the wonderful messages from you. And I am very grateful for you. And for those who haven't reached out and still like the show and still get value from the show, I feel you. I do. I feel you. I know you're out there. And for those who don't like the show and this is their first episode, I'm sorry. Sorry, I can't help you. But I hope you tune in again and we can all get together once again. Thank you again, patrons, and thank you anyone that shows their support in any way. And I want to remind you of Love and Abuse, my other podcast. If you are having any difficulty in any relationship that you are in, any type of toxic communication or poisonous behavior, something that you want to figure out how to get through, or maybe even how to get out of, or you just want to heal from reacting in a certain way of this from this behavior, then head over to loveandabuse.com, and I think you'll find that very valuable. I look at Love and Abuse and the Overwhelmed Brain as reaching a similar outcome, which is improving yourself so that you can have better relationships. I think both of these shows do that, so loveandabuse.com if you're interested in that. And finally, I'd like to thank Kevin McLeod of incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And I'm going to read you a quick letter for the close of the show because this is somebody who may be dealing with something they don't need to deal with. This person wrote and said, I have gotten into 3 car accidents in 3 years. The last one, I broke my leg and my ribs, as well as getting a brain injury. I've gotten to the point where my fitness is back to normal. However, my emotional state and well-being is distraught. I've been listening to you for a while and your work helps. I've even got my girlfriend to listen to. Well, thank you. Thanks for sharing the show. And he goes on to say, however, I keep reliving those moments. And none of these were my fault. 2 were the weather, where the roads were terrible and the weather changed suddenly. And then the other was a driver who ran a stop sign. I know I had no control, and logically it's not my fault, but the latest accident also injured someone else, and he is also recovering. Why am I blaming myself? I can't get it out of my head. I've been seeing anxiety coaches, a therapist, and physio, but the only thing that helps me sleep is your voice, as silly as that sounds. No, it doesn't sound silly. I hear that a lot, and I'm very grateful you have a way to fall asleep, and I'm glad I helped there. Do you have any thoughts, any exercises, or something to help me to be a better me for myself, my kids, my girlfriend, my family, my friends? I appreciate your thoughts. All right. That was loaded at the end there. You just gave me the biggest question, very loaded question at the end. Can you help me with all these areas of my life? I want to help you with one area that will probably, hopefully, bleed into the rest of your life. And that is the blaming versus the taking responsibility. Because you said you can't stop blaming yourself. You can't get it out of your head. And I have a feeling if you stop blaming yourself, that the rest of your life would probably go a little bit better. I'm not saying it solves everything. I'm just saying your life would probably go a little bit better if you were to get past the point where you can stop blaming yourself. So here's my take on this. Let me ask you this question. Let's look at all three of your car accidents. If you knew for a fact that you were going to get into a car accident and that you were going to react the way you did and do all the things you did that led to the accident, if you knew all of this ahead of time, would you have done it? Would you have gone through these accidents? I'm giving you silence to answer. You won't say yes. Of course you're not going to say yes. Unless, you know, you might be someone that says, well, everything in my past has led me to this point, and of course I wouldn't change anything because I am where I am now because of that. Yes, I get that. The philosophy's there. The spirituality's there. But I'm just talking about this one event. You know, let's just say that we could change the past and it didn't affect our present. Or if it did, it would only did in a good way. Would you, knowing what happened, go through that again? Typically, people say no. You might still say yes, and I might even say yes at that point. But I'm trying to make a point. My point is, if you knew what was going to happen and you could go back in time and do it again, would you go through that? Let's just say that you said no. No, I don't want to get into an accident. I don't want that other person to get hurt. I don't want to be hurt myself. I broke a rib. I got a brain injury. I don't want to go through all that. That's probably where your mind goes if you're not too spiritual or philosophical or whatever, because you probably don't want to experience that pain and the suffering. And now you're in this self-blame. You just want things different. So my question, the reason I asked it, would you go through it again? Would you have done it? If the answer is yes, then we could look at blame as something that you knew was going to happen and you did it anyway. Blame is still a strong word because philosophically, spiritually, however you look at it, somebody might say, well, all this stuff is supposed to happen. But let's just play pragmatically for now. Yes, I would do it again, Paul. Then I would say, then you're probably to blame. Because you knew it was going to happen and you did it anyway. But my point is, if you said no here, then you're not to blame. But you are responsible. You are responsible for your role in the events that unfolded. You're responsible for getting in your car every time. You're responsible for steering left instead of steering right. You're responsible for everything that you did. Because you didn't know what was going to happen until after it happened. You couldn't know. You didn't know what was going to occur. You didn't know how to get out of the danger zone. You just happened to do the things that you thought you should do, and it turned into an accident. So you're not to blame in that respect, but you're responsible. Just like the other drivers are responsible for their behaviors and for what they did to be a part of this. So you were playing a bigger game with other people that everyone had a piece on the board. You know what I'm saying? The game board. Everyone had a piece on the board. And you were moving toward a goal, which is your destination. They were moving toward a goal, their destination. And fate would have it that you met somewhere and crashed into each other. I mean, assuming that all of these were accidents with other people. I mean, you might have hit a tree, I don't know. But I do know that one of those accidents was with another person in another car, I believe, because that's what you said, that somebody else got injured. So I'm going to assume you probably hit another car. But let's just say that all of these pieces were on the board, just like everyday life. All of these pieces are on the game board, and we're all heading toward our specific goals and destinations, and we're going to bump into each other. So you're responsible for every step you take. They're responsible for every step they take. And sometimes we just crash. Sometimes we do it. And then we suffer because of our decisions. But we're not to blame. We're just taking the next step that we believe is right. You're just taking the next right step. And every time you had an accident, every time something bad happened in your life, unless you knew it was going to happen beforehand, which requires either psychic abilities, a crystal ball, maybe reading your astrology that morning, maybe any of these things, you know what I'm saying. There's very few people that can accurately predict the future. I mean, I don't even know if that's a legitimate statement. I don't know if anybody can accurately predict the future, but if it exists, you didn't have it. I'm going to assume that you didn't possess that ability. And because of that, you really can't be to blame. Now, if you knew that the weather was going to change and that your car absolutely steers the wrong way in rainy weather, and you also knew that the other person coming the other way was going to be there at that day and time, and you also knew that you were going to have some sort of different reaction, or a bee was going to sting you, and then you're going to drive off the road, whatever it was. If you knew all of that ahead of time, which again requires psychic abilities of some sort, then yes, you might be to blame. But I have a feeling that's probably not what happened. I have a feeling what happened is that the players in the game of life, either through random chance or through predestination or whatever you believe, they met. There was just no way around it. It just happened. If you're playing pinball and another ball comes out and you've got two balls on the table, they're eventually going to collide. They have no choice. I mean, the balls have their own journey, but they're eventually going to collide. It just happens. Of course, they're not sentient, so we really can't say that these balls had a choice, but let's just say they did. I mean, this is how I see life in general. A tiger's walking along the plains of Africa, and the tiger decides to go west, and then there's a zebra out there who makes a choice to go east, and then they meet, and you know the kind of trouble that can happen. But no one's to blame. It's just happened, because that's one of the random events that life just tends to bring us, and we have to deal with it when it comes. So I'm saying to you, the person who wrote, you are absolutely responsible for the actions you took that day, from waking up to going to sleep that night. Every step you took is yours, and you have a responsibility there. And when you are responsible, you take responsibility and you make things right, if you can. If that means that you're carrying around some guilt because you did something wrong, then you try to make it right. And if you can't get rid of the guilt, then you have to listen to my episodes on guilt, because I talk about how to get through this and heal from it. And because guilt should be a fleeting thing. Guilt should only be a signal that says, hey, we need to do something. And if you never do something and you hold on to the guilt, then you carry it with you. And you don't want to carry it with you. You don't need to carry this with you anymore. If you're going to fall asleep to my voice tonight, you don't need to hold on to this anymore. This is not a feeling that was supposed to last. This was something that happened. You had some feelings about it. You had to get through it. You had to heal through it. And now you can release it as life goes on. Because if you're holding on to something from the past can slow you down from healing in the future. And what I mean by that is that when you're looking in the rearview mirror, when you're dragging your old emotional baggage around, then you can't show up as the best version of yourself or for others. So they don't get the whole you, they get the you with all this baggage. And I know this is, like you said, there's probably some PTSD in there. And I do hope you're dealing with that. And, you know, listen to my episodes where I talk about dealing with emotional triggers. And I even have one episode I did recently on PTSD and emotional triggers. So listen to that stuff and maybe it'll help you get through it. But you don't have to blame yourself anymore. I'm releasing you. I'm releasing you from this. Thank you for stopping by, my child. Don't take that the wrong way. I'm just having a little fun with that because I want you to inject some humor into this and forgive yourself a break so that you can move on and show up as your whole self from this point forward. It's been a while since I received this email, so maybe you're already there, and maybe you're in a good space, and Maybe you don't even need this show anymore because you're out there speaking and writing books or something. But maybe you're still in that space and you need to hear this. So I hope this helps. And thank you for sharing it with me and sharing it with the world. I appreciate you. And I want you to remember, always keep an open mind, because this is what helps you step into your power so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.